Leadership shouldn't be about who speaks the loudest, but rather who speaks the truest. I'm Charlotte Otter. Welcome to Speech Bubbles, the podcast that's rewriting the rulebook on leadership, communication, and success. In every episode, we're bursting the bubbles of traditional leadership, bringing you raw, real conversations with trailblazers who don't just challenge the status quo, they obliterate it. We're talking to heads of communication who know the power of words, HR mavericks reshaping workplace culture, and leaders from backgrounds that have been silenced for far too long. This is where vulnerability meets strategy, where authenticity beats artifice, where diverse voices don't just speak, they roar. Whether you're climbing the corporate ladder or building your own, Speech Bubbles is your roadmap to leadership that's human, powerful, and unapologetically you. Are you ready to transform how you communicate, lead, and succeed? Then let's burst some bubbles. My guest today is Laurence Paquette. Laurence Paquette is the head of marketing at Vestas in Denmark, a neurodivergent executive, a queer mum, leadership coach, podcaster, and brand strategist. She also produces short, no-fluff videos on leadership, burnout, imposter syndrome, and navigating work as your full self. These have earned her an audience of over 70,000 followers on TikTok, and her thought leadership on LinkedIn has gained a following of 14,000 people. Her podcast, Original Minds, is about leadership for introverts, people who are neurodivergent and non-traditional leaders. If you'd asked me to design the ideal guest for Speech Bubbles, where we talk diversity, reputation, and breaking the traditional molds of leadership, it would be Laurence. She says, I use my voice to push for workplaces where everyone can be their whole self. Inclusion isn't optional, and neurodivergent professionals belong in leadership too. Laurence Paquette, welcome to Speech Bubbles.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
It's lovely to have you with us. So let's talk about inclusion not being optional and the fact that we need workplaces where everyone can be their whole self. What has that meant for you personally, but for workplaces generally as well?
I mean, you start with a big question. So I think personally, as a queer and neurodivergent leader, you know, diversity is not something that's theoretical to me. It's actually a reality that I live every day. So diversity for me really means expanding space so that people can show up to be fully who they are and not just a version of themselves that fits the mold. And that's really important to me because I spent a large portion of my career earlier on trying to fit that mold, and it led me to burnout. And I don't think other people should have to go through that. So that's why for me, this is so important.
Yeah, that's really interesting about showing up as your whole self. And I can see why it means so much to you. Is there a problem when people who are not very nice show up as their whole selves? Like that question of authenticity being contested?
For sure. I mean, and of course, someone could say, well, you know, being arrogant or being a bully is who I am. So, of course, showing up as your whole self also means having high levels of self-awareness and understanding how you impact others. Also, it's not just about being selfish and self-centered. So it is not just about who you are. It's also about how, you know, do other people relate to you and how do you make space for everyone without being, just a bad person to be around. So I think that's part of the conversation, but I think we haven't reached that part of the conversation yet. When we talk about diversity and showing up as your whole self, we are still only talking about me being me and how do I show up as me at work. And we haven't yet, or we're not mature enough in that conversation yet to talk about, okay, now let's talk about the next step, which is showing up as yourself and how do you impact other people. That will probably come later.
Yeah, that's a really good point that this is a conversation that's happening in stages. Mm-hmm. And that we don't necessarily have the maturity for that yet. You've talked about it from a personal point of view. What does it mean in the workplace for other individuals?
So for them to show up as their whole self, you mean?
Yes.
So I think for others to show up as their whole self, And as individuals, it's probably the same as it does for me. But of course, it depends of where you are in your process. How well do you know yourself? How well are you willing to show who you are to others? How comfortable are you with your own vulnerability? Because it is extremely vulnerable to show up to work as your whole self. And if you're not ready for that, it is also okay. So it is something that people need to do at their own rhythm. And they need to do it in a way that feels safe to them. And that's part of their responsibility. And it's also part of the responsibility the employer has to make sure that there's enough psychological safety at work for them to show up as themselves.
Yeah, you're speaking all the language that I love to use and which shows up as well in We Need New Leaders. And that notion of psychological safety, I think often it's kind of bandied about rather freely without mm-hmm. people necessarily understanding what it means at its depth, which is that you can't just say this is a psychologically safe space as a leader. You have to create it.
Yes.
You have to make it happen.
And you have to live by it every day, which is probably the hard part, because you can decide to make psychological safety a priority, but it takes hard work and it's every day. And it's not just something you say, it's also something you have to do as a leader. And in order to create that environment, it also means that you have to be willing to put yourself in a vulnerable position. You have to be able to show your employees that it's okay to be vulnerable. And so for leaders, it is actually a big step, because it means that you no longer can pretend to just be strong and know the path and know all the right decisions. You also have to be willing to showcase that you don't know, that you don't feel good, that you might be going through something difficult at home. And you have to be willing to talk about it, or at least say it. And not everyone's comfortable with that. And so it takes a long time to build psychological safety, especially if leaders are not willing to do it themselves and show the way.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And it speaks to something I talk about a lot, which is this idea of perfection and not showing any vulnerability in leadership. So these leaders who project this kind of perfect persona never have any cracks, never have any vulnerability. And then another type of leadership, which is what you embody and many of my interviewees and We Need New Leaders, which is showing the vulnerability, showing the messiness, owning their identity, owning their cracks and faults. And I believe that that's the transition that we're in at the moment, from that very concrete perfectionist leadership persona to leadership by real human beings.
I completely agree. I think we're in that transition. I do think that younger people entering the workforce is also forcing us in that direction way more. But I do feel, from working with people of different generations, different backgrounds, different, you know, walks of life, that it's still a work in progress. There is still a very strong perception that you need to fit in. That, you know, you need to, you know, leave a lot of stuff at home. And that if you are ambitious, if you want to succeed, your chances are probably going to be reduced if you don't fit the mold. And I still feel that often. So I do think that the transition is ongoing, but it'll still take quite a few years till we are in a place where you can have equal opportunities even by being your full self at work.
Yeah, and that's why we need leaders like you, Laurence, who's speaking it all the time and kind of shining a light on what the path might look like for others. So let's dial it back a bit now. You were born in Montreal and you now live in Copenhagen. What took you to Denmark and what do you love about living there?
So I came to Denmark because I had met a person online. So my first Danish girlfriend, I met her online, and then I decided to come to Denmark as an exchange student. So I came to Denmark with a plan of being here for 6 months in 2006. And 19 years later, I am still in the country. I have changed girlfriends a few times at this point. I got married, I got divorced, I got two kids, but I've been here for 19 years. And I think, as any immigrant will experience, at some point, you live somewhere for so long that going home or going back to where you come from becomes something that you could do, but it's difficult because you've uprooted yourself completely. And I love Denmark. It's a great country, great way of living, good work-life balance. People are nice. I like the humor. And so I just enjoy living here now.
That's so great to hear. And I relate too to that immigrant experience. My husband and I moved to Germany as newlyweds for 2 years, and that's coming up for 30 years ago. And what we love and what we've chosen in our lives is living in Europe. So that accessibility to other countries, having other countries on your doorstep, and the freedom to move around that we find very lovely. So you came to Denmark for love. You studied in Denmark.
Yeah, I finished my bachelor here, and then I did a master's in Denmark. So
your entire working career has been there. Talk us through your leadership journey.
So I think my leadership journey is very non-linear. I don't think it was a plan that I would end up in corporate. In a corporate job and in a leadership position. I honestly took the job I took, which is for the company I still work for today, because when I graduated, I had 6 months to get a job. Otherwise, my visa would be revoked. So I just took the first job that I was offered. And I never thought that I would end up in a large company in a corporate role. And it's been very nonlinear because I've had about 7 different positions in the company I work for. In different areas, because I do tend to get bored after 2-3 years in the same position. So I've been changing quite a lot. And as I've changed position, I've also managed to climb up the ladder and end up being asked to be the head of marketing for the company 3 years ago.
Congrats on that. And what is the size of the team that you run?
So the team, our headquarter team is quite small. It's about 25 people. And then we have teams in all of our 5 regions. So overall marketing is about 50 people globally for a company that's 30,000 people. So it's very lean marketing setup. And that's probably because we're a very B2B manufacturing company. So it's a small setup for marketing.
And given that you lead a team of 50 and in different countries, what is your leadership style?
I think my leadership style is probably quiet and calm. I do prefer to listen than to talk. And I prefer to ask a lot of questions and try to have my own team find their own ways. I do find that if you ask the right questions, people usually tend to have the answer. And when they have their own answer, it's probably easier for them to implement or to follow up or follow through if they found the path themselves. And I also believe a lot in autonomy. I have a saying that my goal, and I think I've reached it by now, is to make sure my team is so autonomous that they almost don't need me. Because I do think that, of course, that makes me replaceable and that probably jeopardizes my own position. But at the same time, if I do a good job, everyone in my team should know what they have to do and should be able to do it without my presence. So I'm there and I continue to work and I have a lot of stuff to do, but I'm really operating more as a guide and as a person who comes in and also removes obstacles and I do a lot of stakeholder management.
Yeah, that really resonates with me when you talk about the quiet and calm style and asking a lot of questions. And you do talk on your blog and in your podcast about leading as an introvert. Do you call yourself an introvert?
Yes, I am an introvert. I would have to say that most people still don't believe me to this day. I've been extremely good at hiding it. When I started my career, I realized very quickly, because I'm ambitious, that if I wanted to succeed, I probably had to be an extrovert. So I've been extremely talented at pretending to be one. But I am an introvert. And now that I've climbed enough, I've decided that I would stop pretending. I've burned out twice already. So I've decided I would stop pretending, also because I want to show other people that it's possible to be a good leader and to be an introvert. So I don't like social gatherings. I don't like, you know, brainstorming sessions with 20 people. I don't like after work, or, you know, happy hours and stuff like that. I've done it all, but I don't like it. And I think that it's time for the corporate world to change so that people who don't feel comfortable in those settings don't have to be penalized for that.
Yeah, I'm relating to this very strongly. So I only discovered I was an introvert during the pandemic. I didn't know. I just thought I was a bit odd. And I discovered during the pandemic that despite lockdowns and all the tragic things happening around the world, that actually I was very happy staying at home and not being forced forced to socialize. And so now with that new knowledge, I can pick and choose when I socialize, and I feel very much more comfortable in that. But it also made me look back on my leadership, because I led a global team of 50 as well. And I thought that explains a lot. That explains why in meetings, I didn't want to be the loud one talking all the time. You know, I wanted to bring other people into the conversation and make sure that the meetings that we led were as inclusive as possible. So we talked a bit about inclusivity and diversity and why those are meaningful to you personally. And I definitely see inclusive teams and inclusive workplaces is absolutely key to the future of work. But we're seeing this pushback against DEI in the US, and that's kind of leaking into Europe in really weird ways. How do you think about the pendulum swing, and what are we doing about it?
I think you know, if you look back at other things that have happened in history, especially in, let's say, in the last 50, 70 years, the pendulum tends to always go one step back every time we go two step forward. I do think that for me, coming, before I talk about, you know, being neurodivergent, just being part of the LGBTQIA community, you know, progress has been made constantly since the 60s, but there has been a few step back throughout the process in the 80s with AIDS coming in. In the 90s, we saw great progress. And then, you know, Ellen DeGeneres, for example, in the US came out as a lesbian, but then she was fired from her own show. So every time there's big progress, there's a few step back. But right now, we're stepping backwards quite a lot. I do think that this gives permission to a lot of companies to reduce what they're doing for DEIB and not force them to do it. And that is problematic, because it means that a lot of efforts will be put aside and will take a few years to recover. But I do think, and maybe it's more wishful thinking, or I'm naive or just hopeful, but I do think that when we look at Gen Zs coming into the workforce, DEI is critically important for so many of them. So I do think that even though we're going backwards, the younger workforce will force us back into this over time and over the coming years. For them, they also look at this completely differently than older generations. This is for so many of them non-negotiable. They also look at gender identity in a much more fluid way. They also are much more comfortable with people of different backgrounds, of different ways of being, and they are more comfortable with differences. So I do think that the younger generation will help us get back on track in a few years. And in the meantime, we just have to hang in there. We can see that some companies are willing to continue. And we can also see which companies were just doing for show, because they just opt out as soon as they could.
Yeah, absolutely. And 2 points there I'm going to pick up on. One is, you're saying we take a historical perspective, that the pendulum has swung against in different ways in history before and then swings again. So we can kind of take a step back and observe and know that things will change. And then the second point, we can't argue with demographics. And I couldn't agree with you more. My kids are all Gen Z. They're all incredibly open-minded. They accept and love fluidity in themselves and amongst their friends. And so they are the managers and the leaders of the future. So they're going to build and create inclusive teams and inclusive workforces, without a doubt. So a slight shift now, Laurence. You are on top of your busy job. You're also very active as a coach, and you're active on TikTok and on LinkedIn as a thought leader. How do you think about your own reputation?
I think that's a very good question. I think reputation, the way I think about reputation has changed a lot over the years. I used to manage my reputation at work very proactively, because I knew that if my reputation preceded myself, I would have better opportunities. So I've always been very keen on managing my reputation. But now I think, now that I'm older and I've been doing this for a little bit longer, I think I look more at my reputation, not about what people say about me, but more what I leave behind in the room or what I leave behind online as a feeling or as an impact. So I really focus on my reputation more as the impact I can have. And I really care about how consistently I can show up, even if it's quietly. I think showing up consistently speaks a lot louder than having some sparks coming out here and there. And I've also grown accustomed now that people don't always agree with me, that I'm not for everyone, that some people don't like who I am. And that's okay. I don't like everyone either. And as long as I feel that the people I'm trying to reach out or the people I'm trying to connect with understand where I'm coming from and the reputation that I want to bring forward, then I'm okay with that.
Yeah, that's so lovely. And nobody has said that to me yet, that they think about their reputation as something they, a feeling that they leave behind. And that's such a beautiful way into thinking about reputation, because people talk about it in a binary way, that it's what you say about yourself and it's what other people say about you. But you're cracking that open as to something in between, which is an impact or a feeling that, that you leave behind, which is really effective, actually.
If people feel like when I have a conversation with them, if the feeling they have when they leave is that they felt safe or they felt seen or they felt understood, then I feel that then I will have a good reputation. Then my reputation will be to be a safe place or to make people feel good. And I think reputation should be a lot more about the impact and the feeling you leave in people than what you said.
Yeah, and there's a beautiful intentionality in that. And what intentionality leaves you is the freedom to be yourself, going back to what we were talking about at the top, without having to manage or master or control your reputation in a kind of panicked perfectionist way, also going back to what we were talking about at the beginning. So if you just operate, you know your values are good, you operate from that place of intention, then your reputation follows.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I have to say, though, that I sound wise now, but that's not how I operated with my own reputation for years. For years, it was very controlled. It was really much what I say, what I do, how people perceive me. And it took me a very long time to realize that that's beneficial. Yes, but it doesn't allow me to be who I am.
And what was the process of letting go of that version and moving to this version?
I think it was the process of, well, like you, the pandemic taught me a lot. I ended up in a burnout situation and I discovered that I was autistic. And I think that discovery, which first I was a bit shocked and I refused to accept this. But over time, as I accepted and figured out how it has impacted me and how, as I figured out who I really am, when I don't mask, when I don't hide that part of me, I realized that if I want to be me, I need to let go of the polished version of myself. I need to let go of trying to fit the mold. I need to let go of managing what I say and how I appear, because I will at times appear strange or different. And that's part of who I am. So I need to focus on something else.
Yeah. And that idea of neurodivergence in leadership, so that's been a journey for you, but is that something that you focus on in your coaching?
Yes, but I have to say I do, but I have to say that more and more people come to me telling me in confidentiality that they are autistic or they have ADHD or they have dyslexia, but it's always in confidentiality. We're still really far behind that people don't yet feel comfortable telling their peers or their colleagues or their managers about their neurodiversity. So I do some coaching and mentoring around this topic, but it's really people are tiptoeing. It's almost like they're sharing a secret with me because they know it's safe and I'm not going to do anything with this information, but there's still a lot of so much negative stigma so that people are not ready to talk about it openly. That's one side. And the other side is that managers, leaders, people in large corporations still don't really know what to do with this and how to accommodate or how to meet people within who are neurodivergent.
So is there an option for you to also coach leaders on how to manage teams that are diverse.
And also an opportunity for me to remind everyone that, you know, when we create accommodations or when we listen and try to understand people who are neurodiverse and how it impacts them, we're not just helping them, we're actually helping everyone. It is not, you know, by creating, let's say, work environments that are good for people that have sensory sensitivities, it's not just for people who are neurodivergent. Everyone can benefit from workplaces that have quiet areas or areas with less lighting. So it's not about just neurodiverse people. It's about everyone. And there's a lot of opportunities there to educate leaders and help leaders figure out what they can do for everyone.
Yeah, that's so true. And that really speaks to building inclusive workplaces, isn't it? That by accommodating people's difference, we build a workplace that accommodates all differences.
Yes.
And I know as an introvert, I would have benefited at work from some quiet spaces or meetings that were run in a more inclusive way. I would have enjoyed meetings much more than I did when I was at a large corporate. So I can completely see that building spaces for folks who are neurodiverse makes the workplace safer and more pleasant for others. That makes a lot of sense to me. So, Laurence, you talk about building new forms of leadership, breaking the old leadership mold. And my big push with We Need New Leaders and with this podcast is to ask the question about that archetype of leadership we have in our brains. Very old school, very particular, certain kind. And it's almost in our neuroscience. You know, we sort of relate to this type of loud, masculine, extrovert, noisy, room-owning energy type of leadership and think, oh, that's good leadership. There's an academic called Tomas Chamorro-Pramusic, and he says we privilege confidence over competence, which is exactly speaking to the archetype. So my question to you is, what can we do both as individuals, but also as leaders, to start to change that old archetype and learn to accept new and different kinds of leaders?
Yeah, well, I think I completely agree with what you're saying. I mean, collectively, we are still rewarding one kind of leadership, the loudest voice, the boldest personality, and definitely confidence over competence. I think individually what we need to do is we need to lead as we are and stop trying to conform, which is actually really hard because from a survival standpoint, you know, as human beings, conforming, belonging, fitting in is critical. That's how, you know, you survive as a species. And so therefore we need to make a conscious effort to lead as who we are and stop trying to conform, which is difficult, but that's the first step. And then collectively, every time someone leads from a different blueprint, whether they're introverted or vulnerable, or they show a different way to collaborate, or they're just very friendly or very kind, just a different way, we need to recognize it and celebrate it because it makes it easier for the next person to do the same. But we collectively have an obligation to also recognize it and encourage that person to continue, because it can be hard at times to be different.
Yeah, those are two really great points. And the thing that's resonating for me is, so I keep saying to people I talk to, you don't need to mask anymore, show up as yourself. But what you're saying is that changes the system. It's extremely powerful. It's more than just, oh, this is a wonderful thing for you as an individual. You're now finally free of the shackles of trying to fit yourself into a mold. You're saying by doing that, you're changing the system. You're breaking it apart.
Basically, yes. One tiny piece at a time.
Yeah. Which yes. Makes it so much more fun. It's so rebellious. I love it.
If you have an inch of rebellion in you, this is actually can be quite fun and motivating. I have to be honest, I have that inch of rebellion in me, and I do enjoy challenging the mold and showing that we can be different and lead and making some people not uncomfortable in a bad way, but just uncomfortable in the way that they start questioning themselves.
Yeah. You're making me wish I'd done it more when I was in corporate. I had the little seed inside me, but I didn't let it blossom.
I mean, it's also a risk and a challenge because, you know, some people might think that I should be more the way everybody else is. But I've noticed that often that's because they're uncomfortable with facing what it would mean for them if they were to do what I do. Yeah. What would they wear if they didn't have a suit to wear? You know, how would they show up at work if they didn't keep their private life separate? What would they talk about? And that's what I've realized is that when people show discomfort for how I present myself, which is not extravagant or in any way, but just I'm very friendly, talk about a lot of stuff, I realize it's because they don't know what they would bring to work. And instead of seeing that, I used to see that as, oh, no, I'm too much or they're not going to like me. Now I meet them with curiosity because I would like to help them actually be able to be more themselves at work. And so when I feel that people are uncomfortable with my being so true to myself at work, then I try to bridge that gap and figure out, can I help them become more true to themselves at work too?
So you're breaking the system and you're helping others change one by one, which I think is so beautiful. So we now get to the three questions I always ask. Give us a book recommendation.
I would like to give two. So I would like to say that maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, Dare to Lead by Brené Brown really impacted me. And I think regardless of who you are and where you are, I think Brené really brings things to a very basic level. It's very easy reading, but it just really impacted me there, you know, to read such a book about Dare to Lead, and all of her books, to be honest, made me feel better about who I was and who I am. And then the other book is much more, it's for anyone who's in leadership or anyone who thinks they might be autistic, is Unmasking Autism by Devin Price. And it's really about autism, what it means to be autistic, especially in a place and time where so many people are discovering late in life that they're a neurodivergent. I really recommend that book because it talks about how we hide to survive and what it looks like to unlearn that, which is an extremely difficult process, I have to say.
Yeah, and you're speaking from experience there for sure and from the heart. So Laurence, would this be a moment to mention that you two are writing a book?
Sure. I'm in the process of writing a book. It has a temporary tentative title called Lead Anyway. And it's basically structured around 10 rules for people who don't fit the mold, but who should still lead. And how do you tackle not fitting the mold when you are a leader or when you want to be a leader? And it's really for introverts, for neurodivergence, or for anyone who's just different.
Yeah, I think that's the book I would have liked in 2018 when I became a leader for the first time. It sounds wonderful. So, Laurence, you know, my mission in life, as is yours, is to open doors, to make sure that we're welcoming people from diverse backgrounds, diverse identities, underrepresented minorities to be themselves in the workplace. And if those folks have ambition to lead or to land, keep, or create their dream leadership roles, what three tips would you have for them?
I think the first tip is to stop waiting for permission. Too many of us are waiting for permission to lead. We don't need more people that are the same to lead. We need more people that are different. So don't wait for permission. The second advice would be to protect your energy. Burnout is not a myth. It can happen to anyone. It is really important to protect your energy and to focus on what's important. And the third would be to find your people. Find people around you that can cheer for you, that understand you, because in the workplace, you might not find those people or only find a few. So find your people so you have your own cheerleading squad with you.
Those are lovely tips. Thank you so much. And last question, what brings you joy?
Well, I think post-pandemic, spending a lot of time at home, I would say. Spending a lot of time at home, a lot of time alone, a lot of time with my kids. And I go to a lot of concerts. I love live music. But really, just spending time with myself, I would like to say, brings me joy. And I am happy for that. And I am okay saying it out loud now, which I wasn't maybe 10, 15 years ago.
Well, as a fellow introvert, I can strongly relate to that. Laurence Paquette, thank you so much for joining me on Speech Bubbles.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.